Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? This is the first one that I am recording in my new home in Saranac Lake, New York. Amy, Walter, myself, and our three dogs drove from Los Angeles, California, all the way here to Saranac Lake, and we've been very, very happy. A lot to be done around the house. For those of you that follow me on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, it's basically becoming a Home Depot commercial with the amount of DIY projects we've been doing. But being around my brother and my parents and his kids and fresh, you can drink water out of the lake. It's not ideal, you know, I have a Brita, but it's so clean here. And I have some really cool clips this week. I have some stand-up clips. I have some family clips. I have some clips from a fire. First things first, I am plugging some dates. I'm at Parlor Live in Bellevue, Seattle. But it's like where Microsoft is. One of my favorite clubs in the entire country. It's unbelievable. I haven't been able to promote it much because I got it last minute. The guy who runs it just texted me, you do it? I'm like, yeah, I'd love to. So I'm heading there this weekend. So come there, parlorlive.com if you want to get tickets to see the Big Bear. And then the weekend after, I am at Fort Worth, Texas, Hyenas. So I think, yeah, tickets are on my website, hugepianist.com. And then the end of August, no, the beginning of September, I'm doing Syracuse Funny Bone, first weekend. So get all that stuff going. And we finally got our milk zombie bibs that we're going to sell on my website. Because when a baby breastfeeds, sometimes they get milk everywhere. And it's super funny if they're wearing milk zombie bibs because they literally look like zombies. It makes me laugh. I want to start this podcast by one very, very good thing that I'm happy about. My dad has turned a corner in his life and he's awesome again. Not that he wasn't awesome, but he's been on some weird pill for his heart since 2005. And my dad has his PhD in rhetoric. You know, Upton Sinclair was his hero. He's one of the sharpest people you've ever met. He got a scholarship to go to Northwestern and his dad was a furnace cleaner. He has his PhD, went to Oxford. He's smart. He went to Oxford because of his brains, not because of his family. He's one of those guys. He's just that talented. Played the violin, just debate legend. And he had this haze about him for literally like the last 10 years. We're like, not bad. He's still smart. He's still quick, but he's like left of Marx when it comes to politics. And so, but it used to be fun. Like he would, like a political debate, he would enjoy. And I would a lot of times argue the Republican side just because if people agree, it's a pretty short conversation. So I would, I would always play devil's advocate and try and see things from other points of view. And we would argue and fight, but he always had this grin on his face, like he was enjoying it. And I love that about him. And then like for the last 10 years, it seems like he hasn't enjoyed it. He hasn't enjoyed he's like a jujitsu or ninjitsu, whatever that's called, for like thoughts. And so if you have a differing opinion, he just soaks it up and loves it. And he's a professor, so I'm sure he's still kicking ass in his class, but just our relationship has been a little, not bad, just slightly off, you know? Like, I feel like when we debate, it feels angry versus, like, fun. And he was up here visiting this weekend, and he said that he was having a night where he was so depressed and he couldn't get out of bed. And he just was like, screw it. I'm not taking this pill. And he's never had high cholesterol, but he had a stent in his heart, and he had to start taking these pills. And the next day, it was as if 2005 dad just started talking again. And I was like, holy shit. Like, here's a clip from dinner of me just making sure that he stops taking these pills.
Yeah, because dad, you just seem so much fucking happier, more lucid.
Well, I'm on the vacation too. That always helps.
No, it doesn't.
No, dad, I promise you those pills are bad for your brain. Promise you. Because you're the sharpest fucking guy ever, and like, I just don't trust, I don't trust pills.
And charismatic doctors can make it seem that.
Well, it's all fear. Yeah. It's just like, you. It's just like mechanics. It's like when the stakes are that high, like, do you not love your family? It's like, Jesus. Mm-hmm. Well, then you need to get a certain type of break or else they're going to fly off a cliff. And it's like, the thought of that happening is worth the money. And that's why it's like, they you literally can't help but pay it. It's like sad.
There are ads on television for pet insurance. Do you love your little cat? Here's this little, well, then they want you to buy pet insurance for, which is not cheap. They don't tell you what the cost is. But,
it's not cheap.
Well, if it were low, but I think it's expensive.
The business plan is literally like, do you love your pet? If so, give me money.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same with like diamonds and stuff. It's like, do you love your girl? Well, then give me money for something that you can't ever resell. Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to record more of him this weekend, but he's back. He's just back. And it's incredible. He didn't seem that excited about meeting Walter at first. And now I walk in the other room and he has him bouncing on his knee. He's playing. He does all these like games. He's very childlike, my dad, in a really cool way. He's like, ta ra ra boom dee. Like my dad used to, when I was a kid, go into a major store and be like, I'm a little teapot, short and stout. Here is my handle. Here's the other handle. Oh my God, I'm a sugar bowl. Like he took everything from life. Like he loved life. He loved people's reactions. He loved just being a part of the energy of it, the force. And then, you know, like back in the day, I remember he would talk about like George Bush or like the first George Bush or Reagan, and he would watch McNeil Lair Hour and he would swear at the TV and say these goddamn Republicans are ruining everything. But we'd still be close friends with a lot of Republicans, and it was just fun. It was like, oh, you like the Bills, I like the Giants. It wasn't serious. And then lately there was just like this anger. I think a lot of the country is feeling it. And it's good to see him back. It's good to see him back. And I don't know how else to put that. One of the reasons I came to Saranac Lake was I felt like something was off in Los Angeles, especially when I had a baby. And there's a moment that everyone knows that feeling when there's a moment that you can't get out of your head. Like, let's say you're with you have a friend, a very close friend, and you end up in the hospital or in jail or on the side of the road. And they don't help you. You know, they ignore your text or call or say like, oh, I'm sorry, my email was broken. You know, something bullshit. And you can still be friends with them, but it's just never really the same. You always just look at them like, I know where you belong in my life. You don't get the whole thing anymore. And you forgive them. You're not even mad at them. It's just like a shift. There was a moment in LA when I realized that we needed to leave. And it was a long time coming, and it had to do with being married and having a child. And it can be a very dangerous place for women, Los Angeles. It just can. And Amy and I have been through some stuff, some personal things, but some things that she's went through that I don't want her to ever have to go through again. And she's very happy being a mom. And doesn't want to have to leave Walter, and I don't want her to have to leave Walter. So we no longer wanted money to be an issue. I want her to be able to not work, and we can live very comfortably. But as a professional, there was a moment when I realized there was a sickness in LA, and it's that they don't clap for babies. And I'll explain. When I'm on the road, this is my first kid, so I didn't really understand this. But when I have like several joke premises now about having a baby. And when I'm in Kansas or New York, Buffalo, New York City, the whole state, or Pittsburgh, Philly, Detroit, Seattle, Sacramento, Phoenix, you know, everywhere I can think of. When I say, I just had a new baby, people always clap. They clap. They clap for new life. LA doesn't clap for babies. And it's not that they're bad crowds. They're great crowds. They're great people. My most brilliant friends live in LA. I love the city, but they don't clap for babies. And that I couldn't get that sound out of my head. My next podcast episode, I'll show you what I mean. Like, they'll die laughing and clap and hoot and holler and have a great time. And then when I go, oh, I just had a baby, they're not mad. They're just waiting for the joke. They don't clap for it. And I'm just like, I don't really feel comfortable having a family here anymore. They don't clap for babies. So Saranac Lake has a deep history as far as healing. And one of the reasons we picked Saranac Lake, the main reason, of course, is my brother, his wife, and his three children live here. But apart from that, it's a small town. It's 5,000 people. But it's not one of those... I love my hometown of Oswego, New York. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Those people are the best. I mean, I did a show there recently and everyone came out and it was touching to see everyone. And it's beautiful and there's a lot, it's just great. But there's something a little downtrodden about it. Like, some of the people look at you like, we can't leave. Or it feels kind of like one of those towns where it's like people are dreaming of leaving. You know, they're like, I'd leave if I didn't have to stay here. It's the end of the road, you know? And I made fun of them for it, because they know it, and it's funny. Like, I'm like, literally the highway ends here. But Saranac Lake isn't that. It's 1980, Miracle on Ice. That's Lake Placid. That's 6 miles from my house, where the Americans beat the Russians in the Olympics. And I'll let my brother explain the rest of the history, but it's the kind of town where you have... you know, most of our friends out here are either tree guys or builders or mechanics or professional woodsmen. I didn't even know that was a thing, but there's also, like, right down the street, there could be the CEO of Citibank lives here, or like, because it's just people that have that moment where, I don't know if it's the clap for babies moment, but it's that moment where they're like, I got to get somewhere where I can drink the water and the air smells great. And the people are excited about their life and their focus isn't on themselves, it's on the community. People make eye contact here, they wave, they help each other out. You know, if you need anything, people help you out. It's really cool. So here's my brother explaining a little bit of the history of Saranac Lake.
So Edward Trudeau, did you hear this part?
No, I missed the whole thing, I was untangling.
So Robert Trudeau contracted tuberculosis.
Yeah.
In New York City. In the 20s. His brother Edward Trudeau was there by his side. And they thought that putting someone in bed, under covers, with the window shut,
yeah,
was the way to cure TB. And it's not. So Edward Trudeau was there by his brother and he contracted tuberculosis.
Was he rich?
I think he was doing pretty well. I don't know his backstory that well. He's a doctor.
Yeah.
Dr. Edward Livingston Trudeau.
Nice.
Like Gary Trudeau, the cartoonist who does Doonesbury.
Yeah.
That's like his grandfather.
Nice.
Like he grew up here. Gary Trudeau. So... Edward Trudeau contracted tuberculosis. The doctor told him, you're going to die. So go enjoy your life, man. You're on borrowed time. So he came here. And he lived. Because of all the air, the elevation, the fresh air.
Yeah.
Saranac Lake is the fresh air town. So he wanted to test the hypothesis. He wanted to find out, before he brought people, he got rabbits. And he gave rabbits TB. Amy asked me how he did that. I don't know. He put it on his dick and he banged it. So there's an island on St. Regis Falls. Or St. Regis Lake called Rabbit Island. Where he the rabbits that he gave TB, he put half of them in a basement. And the other half he put on this island. Because predators they won't swim to kill rabbits. So the rabbits with the TB on the island, Rabbit Island, that I went by the other day, they lived. So he had that eureka moment.
Right.
So he brought people. But the first people he brought was a little red cabin at the end of Algonquin Ave, where Trudeau Institute is, you know, by Camp Tonona.
Yeah.
Where that big facility there is, Trudeau Institute.
Yeah, that's why I asked if he had cash, because it seems like he could do all these things.
Well, yeah, I don't know who funded him or the how that was.
Because if we figured out rabbits were surviving on the island, we'd probably just grab some beers and fucking be like, that's crazy. Because we couldn't build a fucking institute.
He was motivated, and he was a wicked hunter, dude. This guy was a neat guy. So he had this little cabin built called, well, he didn't make the Trudeau Institute. He died before that. Mm. But he made Little Red. And he brought these two waitresses from New York City who had TB to that cabin, and they lived.
Wow.
So then Saranac Lake became a mecca. It became the hubbub of TB curing. That, like, the prisons were hospitals for the poorer people. People that had more money came to, like, my house.
Yeah, that has a TB porch, right?
Yeah, so the houses, the fresh air porch, is like when you come into town, like these houses don't have it. This isn't part of the history.
Right.
Like when you go into town, like my neighborhood, all the houses have these, they have built porches on all of them. They just built porches where people would be like wheeled out on these, like, you know, recliners with blankets in the winter. And they'd have all the windows open, and they're just breathing the air and having their lungs drained. So the town, and like people came up here, like, you know, famous people were here. Not even just for TB, but like, you know, some people came up to cure TB that were like, you know, incredible architects and masons.
Didn't Mark Twain live here? And like,
yeah, my besides mom lives in his house.
Einstein
was up here. Robert Louis Stevenson was up here. Bella Bartok was up here. But there were just artists up here. Like, the town is so artistic. Like, if you look at the facades of the buildings, it's like these all these guys pretty much were up here, and they were also bored.
Yeah.
So they started, like, barrel jumping. They started building ice. Like, we have a winter carnival. We build a fucking ice castle.
That's amazing.
Have you seen this?
No.
Yeah.
I haven't.
Well, I've seen pictures. Because weren't you the king of the...
I was the chamberlain. I was like the fucking MC of the winter carnival. It was for the groovy 60s.
That's awesome.
So, you know, they were like, you know, they didn't have internet or Apple TV. They're like, we have to do things. So they started building castles out of ice, dude, and barrel jumping and like, ice skating and skiing and famous skiers. Wicked. The Jackrabbit Trail up here was just like.
Yeah, we beat the Russians here. 1980.
Yeah, but not for the gold.
Didn't we win gold?
We did, but it wasn't against Russia.
But, I mean, Miracle on Ice, though, that was fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah. But it's funny, that wasn't for the medal. We beat Finland for the medal.
It was a good finish.
Hey-o. Hey-o. There's so much history up here, man. I mean, it's...
Well, yeah, my boy Kevin Hickerson, the physicist, like loves it up here because of Oppenheimer. Or no, who's the... What's the institute up here that's like... Sciencey?
The Trudeau Institute.
No, but there's another one. It's like, it sounds like Oppenheimer, but it's not. It's like, fuck. Where Kevin and his wife come here a lot. He's like a fucking PhD in nuclear physics. Huh?
Will we be seeing
him? Yeah, totally. Oh, his wife wants to live here.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, people come here. Here's what goes through my head sometimes.
It's like a fund. It's like old money. Super Jewish
Guggenheim?
Name. Guggenheim. Yeah,
the Guggenheim. That's where Einstein was.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, the Guggenheim was built because the Jews weren't allowed in anywhere.
Yeah. Simpler times.
So they had the Aushebel Club, and the Jews weren't allowed, and they had the Lake Placid Club, and the Jews weren't allowed. So the Jews were like, fuck you. So somehow they scored a piece of land, and they built their own resort.
Yeah, it's sick, right?
Hmm.
No?
Well, it's in the wrong side.
It's in the dark side.
It's on the dark side of the lake. Like, there's no sunset there. Like Tonona gets the sunset, you know Camp Tonona?
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Guggenheim is across.
You gotta see Tonona AIM. It's insane.
They'll be back.
Jason's buddies.
So Guggenheim gets the sunrise?
No.
Oh. Look at how optimistic you are. No, the Jews don't get anything with the sun.
Oh. But it's still like Mike.
Is it crazy that we're part Jewish?
I've also gathered up a couple clips. My wife is so goddamn nice and wonderful and just sweet. And it's hilarious how much of a curmudgeon I am in comparison to her. And fortunately, she thinks it's funny. But just listen to some of these clips. This is us at dinner.
The birds sound so pretty right now.
The birds?
Mm-hmm. You're hearing birds?
Mm-hmm. They're out that window.
Not hearing birds.
Well, if she'd stop fucking chomping.
Oh,
she's trying to get everyone to hear the birds, and then she just starts chopping on like really tough green.
I wasn't trying to get everyone to hear the birds. I just said that.
Oh, you're like, how great are the birds? And everyone wants to jump in the joy, and then you start eating green beans as well.
Yeah, like my mom's blatantly laughing. Amy's laughing. Like, I guess they enjoy my Eeyore kind of curmudgeon-y vibe, but it's like Amy is so sweet. And like here's us at the Grand Canyon.
Hey, Amy. Hey, you guys can go ahead.
Oh, thank you.
Cheers. Are you enjoying the Grand Canyon?
Yeah, I am. This is awesome.
What's your first thought when you look at it?
It's just huge. It's so big. I'm trying to get my camera to work.
We don't need that camera. This camera's better.
Cool.
This camera works really well. I've used it thousands of times. That one is really confusing.
Yeah.
And it's bumming you out.
Oh, I found out how to work it.
Oh, now we can record each other and really just become the future.
Yeah. Okay, here's us with my brother at a fire looking at stars.
And it's like I can't see how fast it's moving. That's going so fast. Do you see it, Owen?
Where?
It's moving, it looks like a little star, and it's about to go past the trees.
Yeah.
It's like a steady motion.
I think it's drunk.
When I was a kid, I don't remember seeing a satellite ever.
No, never. We didn't have satellites when we were kids.
And she's been such a, like, some people have kind of implied to me, like, oh, you'll be back to L.A. Maybe we will. There's a chance. Like, if I get on a show that's shot there or something, we may be back. But she's given me this feeling that trumps everything, where I can't explain it. She makes me optimistic. She makes me, like, empathetic to the world. And I was born empathetic, and I think I had a sweetness about me as a kid, and I think I still have some of that, but it's easy to get cynical. It's easy to get jaded. It's easy to see the world as threatening. And she gives me this breath that allows me to not think that way. And a lot of my jokes have been working. That's the funniest part, is I leave LA as I'm the best I've ever been. And I attribute a lot of that to this podcast. This podcast, if I don't have jokes that don't work, or if I don't see struggle on stage, I have no material for this podcast. And I know that fans of the show have seen a few episodes where I'm blatantly just doing a long interview because I didn't bomb that week, frankly. And because I forced myself to have to re-listen to all my sets and really analyze, almost from an optimistic point of view, like, God, I hope I bomb. Like, I wonder why I did. Why didn't they laugh? That's made me such a stronger comic. And I've done this now for 16 years. So it's like, I'm not bragging. I'm saying that there was a change in me when I went from being like, that crowd sucked. Fuck that crowd. They just don't get it. Into really analyzing it from an observer's point of view. And that allowed me to be better. And Amy's a big part of that too, because she's given me empathy. So I can write jokes about my baby crying, how I look up to him because he demands what he wants and he takes it. You know, give me your tit, like all that. It's easy to see the world that everyone's out to get you, you know, that like everyone's an asshole or they're dumb and you're so smart. But when you start looking at them from their point of view, it makes for better comedy. So I have a couple clips here. I cracked the code for summer of 1869. I was doing a set my last week in LA in Venice. Venice is a beautiful, interesting place because they kind of clap for babies. Like, listen to this.
I got a new baby. I have a four-month-old baby, little tiny baby. Yeah, thank you. It's
Yeah, it's kind of family. Like Pasadena, you know, you can go to the outskirts of LA and they'll clap for babies. But if you're going to live in the outskirts of LA, I mean, traffic, 2 hours in traffic sometimes to get from Pasadena to West Hollywood. I can get from New York to LA in 5 hours on an airplane. So it's really not a big deal. What was this clip? Oh, okay. Here's an example. Like my joke, this joke isn't offensive, but normally I would just run through it. I've learned in this set, I learned that like if you give people time to think and simmer, they'll put it together and then they'll laugh and they'll realize it's funny versus sometimes people just react quickly to race or something like that. And if you don't give them time to digest the concept, and a lot of comics make the mistake, myself included, of being like, oh, they're stupid. It's like, no, you've been thinking about this joke now for like 6 months and you've been working at it and the concept's deep inside you and you're thinking about it. You just present it to these people. So they aren't on the same level of processing the concept. So maybe they need some time. So check this out.
His name's Walter. He's part Hispanic, which is a really cool mix because I needed the color and they need the height. Yeah. It was a perfect merger. Two strengths coming together. You know, the son's not my amigo, but they can only play soccer. So we're like... It's good. It's not offensive. I've learned a lot of empathy for younger generation because I used to, they're so annoying when everything's like, whoa. You know what I mean? They always act like it's like, whoa.
Okay, and I've been working on this bit about millennials. Here's the beginning.
And they don't make eye contact, and they're not good with small talk. You know, it's like, where's the nearest gas station? They're like, safe space. You know, they're like weak. And but they're not weak. They're strong. I figured the deal out. I got empathy for them. It's because they were given all the information, and they're doing the best they can. You know, like when I was a kid, we didn't know anything. That's why we're aggressive. That's why we're like, hey, it's cool. Talk to me. It's all good. I don't know anything. Like growing up, like at a party, you had to look in someone's eyes to see if they were lying. Remember that before the internet? When someone's like, my dad invented boats.
And
then you're like.
And I finally have a ending to it. I'm not going to play the whole bit because I think I've covered this in a few episodes. But this kind of closes the bit. And I think it will work down the line.
You know, can you imagine going through puberty when you're a 13-year-old boy and you have all the porn in your pocket in a little square? We had one picture crumpled up on the top of a hill in the woods under some leaves. And we called it Spank Mountain. And we do pilgrimages up Spank Mountain. And the only time we didn't make eye contact is when we'd see another pilgrim.
And by the way, notice here how I lose the crowd for a little while. I do. And they're a great crowd. Awesome. Dialed in. Until I give them a joke to laugh at. And I'm starting to become sillier on stage because I'm always trying to make Walter laugh. So I'm getting into like noises and just like making like funny, goofy noises because that's what makes him smile. So like notice how I'm not getting laughs until I give them a structured place to laugh. And then with it, like I sell it with some silly noises and it works. And summer of 1869 has been plaguing me for a while. And I cracked the code with a little bit of Amy empathy, where if I don't make it about race, I'm not cutting that line. I made my first real black friend, that opening line. I refuse to cut it because I think that's racism, that a white person can't say a benign line. But there's times when it would make people uncomfortable and there's times when it would kill, but I finally figured out how to set it up so that people don't get offended. it's not about race. It's about enjoying your life. It's about the concept that there was a time when reminiscing didn't even exist. Check this out.
Yeah, I hear how everyone now is like, always reminisce the past. Everyone's like, dude, we gotta go back to the way it was, man. Good times. Dude, life always sucked. It's the best anything's ever been. Like, ever. Like, we don't even know, like, back in the day, there wasn't even reminiscing. That wasn't even a concept. This is a really old song. Can you imagine if this song existed? I made my first real black friend. You were working out of mine. He was cool, but I think he gave me typhoid. Was the summer of 1869. Me and some dudes from church got the flu and most of us died. Needed milk, so I went 150 miles. It was a fucking bumpy ride, yeah. When I look back now, the Civil War seemed to last forever. We weren't given choice. They made me fucking shoot my brother. But those were the best days of my life.
And I think people like conflict. I do. We were watching Game of Thrones recently, and I had this thought that 99.99% of Westeros is just living their normal life. Like in Saranac Lake, I look out the door, nothing's happening. And I love it because I've been in the heart of conflict so long, and I still do for a living, that I don't want conflict in my life. I want to focus on my hardwood floors or whether or not I can kill mold. Like I like little problems. I don't want to face big ones. So I made fun of Game of Thrones a little bit. Check this out.
I want to pitch Game of Thrones that they keep cutting to one storyline and it's just a farmer. Most of the whole story, 99% of the population is just like, that's a good potato. But we just focus on the fucking incest psychos because we're fucking crazy. Anyway, what was I talking about?
Okay, I got to read this email too. I love your emails. So always write to me, whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com, because the listeners of this podcast are like me. Like in the sense that they have they like to ponder things. They like to think about life. They don't like to just be tribal and emotional and freak out all the time. And so... All right, I get an email from Dan with Matt Eisenman, the host of American Ninja Warrior that I just had on a week or two ago. We're talking about, well, I'll just read the email. We're talking about the how's my driving, how nobody calls to say anyone's driving well. So, all right, listen to this. Hi, Owen. Hope the move went well. I work as a delivery supervisor for a trucking company, and I'm sitting in my dining room wrapping up open cases from our driver alert phone number system and listening to the Matt Eisenman podcast and had to laugh and write in. We get about a call per week, and I have to say 95% of them are cranky assholes mad that our driver cut them off, never noticing that our truck had been signaling due to an upcoming lane closure for hundreds of feet because they were themselves texting. We then get another 3%, which are genuine safety concerns we need to address, turning left against the posted right, turn only, etc. The remaining 2%, or about once per year, someone does call in with a compliment, but it's always under some suspicious circumstances. That driver had just been written up for poor customer service or something, etc. So maybe they just asked a friend to call and compliment. For what it's worth, this isn't going to end with a plea for motorists to call in on conscientiousness and courteous drivers. It still amounts to a ton of paperwork from either way. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work. And I'd love to hear you guys, and guys like Ari Shaffir and Kurt Metzger podcast together now that you're in New York. Dan, that's an awesome email. I love when people, like when I do, I did something about Jeopardy once and someone emailed me that they were in like a Jeopardy, they were part of making the Jeopardy game and how they like knew every single question after they were done making the game and coding the game, but only in that order. In any other order, they didn't have any retention. That's why I love the podcast, because there's every type of person with any concept we're talking about will write in from their experience. It's incredible. And I love Ari. I've known Ari since open mic times in 2004. Great guy. And Kurt, I just did his podcast recently. He's a great guy. I'd love to do more. East Coast, Yeast Coast. I don't know. That might be a bread reference. But, one other thing I want to talk about. My brother and I are coming up with our own podcast that is really fun. It's called Case Closed. Our slogan is Case Closed, Beers Open. We're small town guys in Saranac Lake trying to solve mysteries for people because we're doing a public good. But as soon as we solve the mysteries, we crack open beers and we're on to the next mystery. And we're going to have a cast of characters in it. You know, there's like Brexit Bill. He's the depressed English guy who's like, I get very sad sometimes. And then we have Trooper Travis. We have Chicken Coop, the bartender. A lot of them are like fairly real people. And we just kind of modify them a little bit. And we're just going to constantly be drinking beers and solving cases. But the cases don't usually get solved. But we love drinking beers. So that's in the works. We're going to make, because my brother's the funniest person I've ever known. So I've been dying to work with him my whole life, but he doesn't want to live in LA or stop cutting down trees. So we're going to do that. I have been touched and heartwarmed by all your support as I came out here. I had a fear that people were going to think I was quitting comedy or they weren't going to like me as much because I'm not one of the cool kids. You know, moving to a small town isn't easy to do when you're part of the nurturing tit of LA. Because I have noticed some people do enjoy talking to you or knowing you or liking your stuff on social media when you're with celebrities. And then when you're not, they're not as excited. But the amount of those people is so low. I thought there would be more, and I'm so glad that isn't true. Because celebrities are very similar to non-celebrities. They're just high-maintenance friends. Great people, a lot of them. Some of them suck. But you get very impressed by them for maybe a month or two when you first move to LA, and then you realize that they don't know how to help you with your drywall, and they won't pick you up at the airport, and they overthink dinner reservations because they don't want to be stared at. I had a recent interaction on my Instagram where the internet actually did a good job. So I posted a video of a bunch of dogs eating a carcass in the middle of Utah. And I was like, you know, things are a little different outside the city gates. And of course it spawned a debate because everything online does. But, and this one woman was like, started calling me heartless and cruel because I didn't stop and help the animal because I only showed one dog. And then she started debating with another guy who was trying to back me up. And it just became a mess to the point where I had to respond. And I was like, lady, like, what are you doing? Like, that, those are farm dogs. Like, that, they were right next to a farm. And I didn't get them because, I mean, the dog's blatantly chubby. It's not a rescue. It's not a, city dogs are different. Like, everyone thinks it's a Sarah McLachlan commercial. You know, that's not what dogs are like in the country. Anyway, so we start going back and forth. And then I posted my response on my Instagram because I didn't want to be called heartless. I care a lot about dogs. And I wasn't trying to get people to attack her. I'm just trying to set the story straight. But people did start attacking her, which I was honestly okay with. I was a little annoyed by this woman. And she said, you know, one of my people said, I guess that's the price of fame, Owen. And she wrote, I didn't even know he was famous. He hosted the Art Director Guild Awards and I thought he was funny. So I added him, but now blah, blah, blah. And I said, then we had another back and forth where she was like, oh, I didn't mean to, cause I said, I'm not famous. But I am a very respected comedian. So like respect me pretty much. And she was like, oh, I didn't know that that got under your skin. And I'm like, no, it's a compliment. Like I'm saying I'm not famous is like, I don't get this type of shit on my pages. Like I'm friends with Amy Schumer. I know Kevin Hart. I know these people. Like if you go on their pages, it's just tens of thousands of like, fuck you, die. Fuck you, Obama. Guns are bad. Guns are great. Like it's just troll shit. And it's like about nothing what the person was talking about. So my point wasn't like, I want to be famous. I'm like, no, it's a compliment that I'm not famous because you can't just talk shit to me. Like I'm still a person. Like, there is a level of fame when you just have to accept that people are going to say crazy shit to you. And I'm not there, and I'm very happy about that. Do I love working? Do I wish I was in more great projects? Of course. But that level of fame, I basically said, this is a good community. So if you're going to be here, talk respectfully. And I don't want you to leave. Like, I don't want you to leave. I'm sure you're a much better person in person than you are online. But I didn't take offense to that, and just try to think the best of someone before commenting. And she accepted that and apologized, and it was cool. It was like the internet won. You know, that's when people can hash out their situations. Where people have this tendency when they see the written word versus the spoken word to assume the worst tone. When you're like, hey, how's it going? People in their head hear like, hey, how's it going? It's like, no, it's almost like when people read, they're yelling in their head when the person writing it isn't yelling. And so with enough back and forth and with enough, like, try to see my point of view, you can really make bridges in this world of walls. You know what I mean? So that was really cool. I'm glad that happened. And I think I'm in a good enough mental place right now where I feel comfortable engaging with people online. I didn't do that for a little while. Like, I wouldn't write back to people that are like commented because I didn't trust myself. There was a good chance I would just start dismantling them like aggressively. And it's like, that stemmed from my own sickness, my own mental problems of like wanting more in a world that's given me enough. So now that I'm surrounded by family and that my days consist of fixing things around the house and seeing my wife happier than I've ever seen her, and like my son and like my dad is off these fucking stupid heart pills, like, I can interact again. Like, I feel comfortable that when someone comes at me, I can empathize more than be aggressive, and I can just be a person again. So anyway, this has been a fun episode. It's sponsored by you. You're the sponsor. So if you want to help out, and if you have cash, buy a bib at hugepianist.com, pianist.com. If you don't have cash, that's fine too. You can help out by just subscribing to the podcast, recommending it to friends, commenting on it, rating it. Influence and stuff like that is almost worth more than money in a lot of ways. So if you do that, that's very helpful. And if you see any of my YouTube videos that you like, comment, spread it, share it. That helps me as much as anything, because I'm trying to work on a career where it's just straight to you guys, and I don't need to go through all these fancy hoops. And the more that you share it, the more I can just not be famous and just be a artisan and make funny shit and live in my house in Saranac Lake with my family. But right now there's six dogs downstairs, and I got to go make sure that no one's getting eaten. So email me, whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. Come out to see me. Seattle this weekend, Fort Worth, Texas, and then early September, Syracuse. And then I got a bunch more dates coming up. A lot of them East Coast, because I get to drive there. What's up? So thanks again for all your support, and I love you guys. Peace. Stay hydrated.